This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I am thrilled today to be joined by Dr. John DiCapua. John is the magnificent CEO of North American Partners in Anesthesia. I've had the chance to watch NAPA, North American Partners in Anesthesia, and Dr. DiCapua grow over the last decade. It's been fascinating to watch. I'll tell a little background of the story on John and NAPA, and then we'll get started with talking about the No Surprises Act and what this means for anesthesia and healthcare and more. And thank you to Dr. DiCapua for joining us today. So NAPA is the leading anesthesia, pain management, and perioperative management company in the U.S. Dr. DiCapua has been a principal driver of NAPA's growth from a team of 100 clinicians serving two hospitals in New York in 1998 to now more than 5,600 anesthesia providers and 1,200 administrators serving over 600 hospitals and ASCs in 20 states. They cover more than 3.2 million anesthesia cases per year. Dr. DiCapua was trained in anesthesia at Harvard Mass General Hospital, followed by fellowships in pain management and cardiothoracic anesthesia. He also previously served on the faculty at Harvard Medical School. Among his many accomplishments, Dr. DiCapua was the Peter F. R. Walker Associate Professor and the founding chairman of the Department of Anesthesia at the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University between 2011 and 2020. He's had a remarkable career and remarkable growth with NAPA. Dr. DiCapua is passionate about infusing a performance-based culture into healthcare and aligning clinicians to reach for quality and economic improvements. He's intricately involved in the issue of perioperative operational management and clinical staffing models, and lectures nationally on how anesthesia departments can provide quality and operational value for hospitals. Today, we'll be talking with Dr. DiCapua about the No Surprises Act, a discussion of status, problems, and actions. It's something that's driven lots and lots of discussions. The federal No Surprises Act is challenging healthcare providers and patients in every state. From calculating the QPA to the influence of commercial payers and the big impact of commercial payers on this act and the arbitration, the problems presented by the final rule, and how they'll negatively affect access to care in the healthcare industry, including anesthesia. We're going to talk about those issues and more. Before we get started, Dr. DiCapua, I've had a chance to watch the growth of your company in NAPA and you over the last decade plus. Truly fantastic. Can you take one moment and introduce yourself to the audience, and then we'll get going in discussing the No Surprises Act?
Oh, thank you very much, Scott, for that kind introduction. And thank you for always hosting these educational podcasts. I think this particular topic is really very pertinent right now, and it's important that we get as many people in healthcare in particular, but also society in general, aware of what is happening with the No Surprises Act. So I really do appreciate you hosting these events. For me, it's been a 40-year journey in healthcare. I've been in anesthesia only, and I've watched it now from a number of different perspectives, both from the provider position, also from the clinical leadership, served as an academic chairman, and now as a corporate executive in a large national company. And I think that those multiple lenses have given me a unique kind of lens as to what is happening here. And I love to have this discussion with you. So thank you again.
Thank you. And I think people sometimes don't really understand the No Surprises Act. There's this concept that somehow or another this was really for the benefit of patients. But talk about what the No Surprises Act really is and how it influences payer-provider relationships. Tell us what the No Surprises Act really is.
You know, the No Surprises Act, and it's just by the name itself, is really a good concept that was designed to help people in society who receive healthcare not receive a surprise bill after the fact and learn after the fact that the people that care for them did not have in-network status with their commercial insurance company. And so at a very high level, it's absolutely, it's like hot dogs and apple pie. It's, of course, something that we would all want just for ourselves, let alone for the patients that we care for. What typically happens, though, is something that has such a wonderful kind of window dressing that we all can rally around very often gets manipulated to serve other purposes. And really what's happening here in the No Surprise Act is the major thrust of this is, in the end, is a way to do two things. One is to decrease the spend on provider reimbursement with the assumption that providers somehow are making too much and that somehow we need to curb the cost of healthcare by targeting provider revenue. And second, it's about giving leverage to the commercial payers so that, again, they can leverage providers into contracts that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. And so the really good idea, we want patients to receive healthcare and utilize the benefits of the insurance companies that they pay premiums to, is now created secondary gains, which are probably even now the bigger thrust of the whole No Surprise Act, which is to curb the cost of healthcare on the backs of providers. And I have a fundamental problem with that.
And John, let's talk about that, because I don't think people really understand. People think that this was driven by patient advocacy and so forth. But talk about the real impact and status of the legislation and how much it leverages commercial payers' position and how strongly it helps commercial payers. Can you talk about sort of the status of the legislation and how much it helps commercial payers and their leverage against providers?
The concept of legislation at a state level to protect patients from unanticipated out-of-network bills is nothing new. Various states have passed no surprise laws for years now. And we as a company have lived with no surprise laws in various states. And to be honest with you, it's a great idea. There are many examples of great state laws that give patients the protections that we all want, for not only for them, but for ourselves, because eventually we all become patients at some point, but create a sense of fairness and equity in the fair market negotiations between commercial payers and providers, so that each can come to the table and negotiate using normal capital market supply demand and the kind of forces that are utilized by every industry in the world to drive pricing. So we know that it can be done right, but what really went off the rails in the federal No Surprise Act is that a lot of money went into pushing an agenda that gave commercial insurance companies a lot of leverage, to the point where it is risking access to healthcare in this country. And it's not going to achieve the goals that it was intended. I've seen this now over and over again. Let's just pick anesthesia as an example, because I know that industry the best. First of all, it's a fallacy that anesthesia has a huge out-of-network burden. 90% of anesthesia in this country is done within network contracts. And so there really wasn't anything to dramatically fix there, because patients weren't getting surprise bills from anesthesia. But this was a broad-based legislation to affect all providers. And in some instances, there probably is a greater out-of-network exposure in certain disciplines. But what's going to happen here is anesthesia providers are losing the ability to sit at the table and negotiate the kinds of revenue that they need in order to provide services to their community. There is an assumption that if commercial payers have significant leverage to be able to drive down provider compensation, that somehow the providers are just going to make less. And that just doesn't work in this country. What decides market wages in the United States is, to a large extent, dictated by supply demand. And if you look at the forces in just this industry, there aren't enough anesthesia providers to service the current need of U.S. healthcare. And we are effectively doubling, because we and I had another podcast before, we were talking about the explosion of ambulatory procedures, office-based procedures, medical innovations that are making patients be candidates for surgery that were denied in the past. And all of that is spreading and spreading thin the current available resources in anesthesia to service all these areas. And so we don't have enough providers to service the current surgical and procedural volume, let alone what's happening in over the decade that's coming as the population gets older and we further increase the supply-demand mismatch. What decides market compensation is, how badly do I need an anesthesia provider in my community? And if hospitals say, I have to have them, they start to bid up for providers. And so there's a complete disconnect between what commercial payers or the government are willing to pay versus what the market will demand for anesthesia providers. And so since the law itself, No Surprise Laws, will have no impact on provider income, what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up having access problems. The communities that can afford the market wages of anesthesia providers, which are dictated by market supply demand forces, they will have those providers, while other communities, because they can't afford those providers, they'll have access problems because there aren't enough people to go around to start with. And so in the end, all of this is heading us down a path, in anesthesia specifically, but this plays out in many disciplines, where we're creating an industry where the hardest hit communities are going to be least able to have access to necessary surgery and life-saving procedures. And that ultimately, bad care ultimately increases cost. And so this was not very well thought out. Somehow we think that this is going to decrease the cost of overall healthcare. which makes no sense at a very high level, because if you had to design a system to curb the cost of healthcare, you would theoretically go where most of that healthcare dollar is spent. And providers are only a small portion of the overall healthcare dollar that is spent in this country. I mean, you know, if you take a look at pharmaceutical companies and the expenses that are just outpacing, you know, CPI in this country, or even healthcare, you know, CPI, that would be a more rational place to start. Certainly the provider base is not where I would go to have the biggest impact. And yet they're the easiest to target, which is what's happening here.
So, and let me touch on this concept you talked about, because I think you could not be any more right in your concept and what you framed. And I just want to have give 60 seconds so it's not lost on the audience. The concept is, if you artificially cram down prices by not letting anesthesiologists, for example, negotiate for the prices, because they're basically, if they're out of network, the payer can ultimately cram down a price on them, which is intended to sort of somehow to reduce healthcare cost. But if you artificially cram down prices, but you don't address supply and demand issues, you can't in the long run be very effective. I mean, that's really the gist of what you're saying. If we don't fix the supply issue to meet the demand in our country, if we don't create more residency programs, we don't make it easier to get through residency programs, you don't fix supply and demand, these other efforts, which are intended to be band-aids but are really poorly thought out, and this one really was payer-friendly, not necessarily patient-friendly, but payer-friendly, you're artificially trying to fix a much bigger problem of supply and demand, and economics just doesn't work like that. Is that a fair statement, Dr. DiCaprio? Help me out on that.
No, you're 100% right. You said it even better than I did. This is a band-aid, and it's a band-aid that's strategically created to give commercial payers leverage over contracting with providers, because that's where their expense is. And it will make commercial payers more successful. All you have to do is look at what's been happening to their publicly stated profits. During the pandemic, they made record high profits while the rest of the healthcare industry, you know, was challenged because of revenue, as they were still servicing the communities. This law is preferentially designed to give commercial payers an edge over negotiating with providers. And that ultimately will not solve the biggest challenge, which is how do we contain healthcare costs? Because challenging providers on revenue doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to make less. Someone's going to have to pay. So people ask, well, who's going to pay? Well, unfortunately, the sites that must have anesthesia, at least in my industry, the sites that must have anesthesia, which is basically every hospital in the country, ultimately will be a backstop so that they can still continue to serve their communities with life-changing surgery.
But your point is that ultimately what it really leads to is, and we've seen in anesthesia on and off forever, is you'll have hospitals and surgery centers having to subsidize anesthesiologists because they got to have enough of them. And there's just a supply-demand difference. Let me ask you another question just to get to the specifics of the act. What is the qualifying payment amount, and how is that calculated? Just to give people, I mean, I'd love you to give definitions on that, and then I want to come back to a definition on the No Surprises Act, just so people really get this clarity of what these two things are. So what is the qualifying payment amount?
The qualifying payment amount, or the QPA, is a term that was created by this legislation that basically is a starting payment that a commercial insurance company needs to pay the provider. And the trick is, how is the QPA defined? Because it's perfectly rational to say, okay, you sent a bill, how much do I need to pay you? If you are out of network, I need to pay you the QPA because it was calculated in advance. That makes total sense, except the fact that the QPA is calculated unfairly. It's supposed to be a measure of median in-network rates. Problem is that anesthesia providers negotiate contracts for anesthesia services, but in anesthesia contracts, we also have many other codes that have nothing to do with anesthesia, so we don't negotiate those rates. Well, same thing happens, for example, with a pediatrician or a neurologist. They negotiate the codes that matter to them, but they don't negotiate anesthesia. Now, in the QPA calculation, everyone gets mixed in as an equal. So the anesthesia median rate will include anesthesia companies that negotiate anesthesia rates, plus all these other specialties that have nothing to do with anesthesia. So that artificially lowers the true in-network median rate, because it's including a whole bunch of professions that really don't have any interest in negotiating or even tracking anesthesia rates. And the same thing happens to every other specialty. So the QPA is being artificially set below the functional in-network median rate. So that means that the very first payment that an insurance company must pay a provider, if they're out of network, will be a below market median rate. That is not a good place to start, because when you tie that to the arbitration, because if you're unhappy with the amount of money that you were just paid for a service, you are allowed to arbitrate. The problem is that the arbitration, you know, regs say that the arbitrator must use the QPA as the most important determinant of what you should have gotten paid. So basically, the law says you will get paid a QPA, which is by definition below the market median, so it's insufficient. And if you got paid that QPA, then the arbitrator should be satisfied with that payment. So it allows an insurance company to pay providers that they can unilaterally terminate and send out of network, which is what's been happening in this country. Providers aren't saying, I don't want to work with you, I want to be out of network. What's happening is insurance companies are terminating unilaterally large groups of providers because they know that when they're out of network, they have this law that allows them to pay these providers below median rates. So the insurance company wins no matter what. They throw you out of network and then they pay you based upon a formula that is guaranteed to pay you less than the median. One would argue that if you wanted to pay people fairly, you would say, what is the average of the providers in this community? And we should pay you, at least as a starting point, the average. This is never intended to be the average. This is intended to lower the mean, to lower the average.
And well, that's the definition of the qualifying payment amount, which sort of leads to a below average payment to start with for the arbitrators. And talk about, again, give us a 60-second definition of the No Surprises Act, just so people get, because we've now got sort of clarity in the qualifying payment amount. It's really a below average payment that sets the standard for payers to look at in arbitration and for people to use for arbitration. Give us a 60-second definition of the No Surprises Act. Then I want to move towards, you know, what should providers do about this and what should people do about this?
Well, the No Surprise Act doesn't even apply if you're in network. So if you're in a network provider, then there's no need to use the QPA and the arbitration process that's afforded by the No Surprise Act. The No Surprise Act only applies to people that are out of network. The problem is that insurance companies have already been unilaterally terminating providers to say, if you don't accept the rate that I want to pay you, meaning it's a one-sided negotiation, then I will terminate your contract and then you'll fall under the No Surprise Act. In the old days, when you were out of network, you still had a chance to negotiate with the commercial insurance companies. But with the No Surprise Act, the way that the QPA has been set and the way that the arbitration part of this law has been set, when you're out of network, you basically still are at the risk of the commercial payers to pay you what they determine is the average amount, which they by themselves calculate. And because it's always below mean, the insurance company wins whether you accept whatever they want to pay you or whether they throw you out of network and then pay you based under the No Surprise Act. So in the end, the patients are always protected. In any of these scenarios, the patient is held harmless and they win, which is a good thing. The problem is, what is it doing to destabilize the healthcare community and the provision of providing access to care in all these communities? Because if you don't pay people what is required to service that community, problems will result. And we're seeing that already. We've seen tons of entities that are saying, I can't afford to cover this community. I have to pull out because the amount of money I'll make either under the No Surprise Act or if I accept what the insurance company is unilaterally negotiating with me will not be enough.
Give us a sense against this backdrop, and I've seen some of the background info. In this particular legislation, which really favors the insurance companies, is there a sense that that's needed? Are the insurance companies struggling, or how are the insurance companies doing? Can you give us a feel for how the insurance companies are performing, you know, financially, John?
Well, I mean, we all saw the headlines of how, you know, since the pandemic and all of this now has come to light, how insurance companies are having record-breaking years in terms of profitability. So insurance companies are not doing hurting financially. They're not. They're doing better than ever before. I'm not saying that they're not necessary. They're obviously an important part of healthcare industry. But if you're asking me specifically, what does the data say about their financial performance? There are a number of very kind of record-breaking years under the commercial insurance market.
Thank you. I mean, really, and what's happened is, and I don't think people realize this, two of the largest six companies in the country by revenues are CVS, Aetna, and United Healthcare, Optum. So you've really ended up with very, very big and strong companies here. And CVS, Aetna, and United Healthcare and Optum, as well as the other companies as well. And it's not they just happen to be very financially strong, and the No Surprises Act tilts the playing field just a little bit further towards them and against providers, is my sense of things. And Dr. DiCaprio, you've had this fabulous, incredible, remarkable career, and I love your insight because you're always a straightforward talker and tell us what you really think and what you see. It's really just a great privilege to visit with you. Talk about what can people do about this? I mean, this is sold as apple pie and baseball and a beautiful thing, the No Surprises Act, but we all know that the reality of it is it tilts the playing field towards payers, against providers. What can people do about this?
You know, it's a shame, but it isn't a subtle tilting. It's very much a designed, you know, the No Surprises Act was designed to tilt negotiating power to the commercial industry because a lot of people want to see healthcare costs decrease. The problem is that they were sold this idea that somehow giving commercial insurance companies negotiating leverage would result in lower costs. That is farthest from the truth. As I said before, how much it costs to care for a community is directly tied to market supply demands and how badly you need the service, and not how much someone is willing to pay you. You can only lower costs if there's an overabundance of workers and you say, hey, I'm going to pay this amount, who wants the job? But when you're constantly in short supply, it is the short supply that dictates how much that service is worth. And so in the end, this is just going to create disruption. So what should people do? Well, first, they need to understand what it's going to mean to them. I can tell you that there are communities right now where entire half of a state has no access to an in-network anesthesia provider. That's a problem, because if you are paying premiums for commercial insurance and within a 100-mile radius, you cannot get to a facility where you can utilize your commercial product, your insurance, in order to find an in-network anesthesia provider, that's just downright wrong. And it's not the providers that are saying, I want to be out of network. It's the commercial insurance company terminating contracts saying, you are out of network because we'd rather pay you under the No Surprises Act. So in the end, you've got the communities that are saying, I don't understand. I'm paying insurance, but I don't get access to in-network providers. That's a problem, because that not only does that ultimately lead to increased costs, but it leads to network adequacy problems. And people may say, I'm just not going to have the surgery. I'm not going to have the procedure, because who wants to intentionally get care from an out-and-out provider when you're paying all of these high premiums already? So in the end, this is going to lead to more costs, not less. The winners are going to be the commercial insurance companies, because when people don't seek care for whatever reason, they're not paying out portions of the premiums that they collect. And so they win in every circumstance. The people that are going to lose are the communities, because this creates confusion. And as I said, network, you know, access problems. And it ultimately falls on the hospitals in our country and the ASCs in our country, because when they have to provide a service, they're going to end up having to backstop the cost of that care. And so I don't understand how this has gotten lost in our political system.
You said something that's so right on, Dr. DiCaprio. Well, what's happened in the political system is there's so much discussion, whether it's on one side about, oh, free market should be everything. On the other side, it's Medicare for all. And we know the reality is, even if we get coverage for everybody, which I think most of us agree we should get to a point where everybody is covered, if you don't address the supply issues in our country, you can't fix supply issues by just cramming down prices. It just doesn't work. You have to address the supply issues, because even if we have coverage for everybody, access will be a long-term debacle, and it's already getting there. But with 330 million people in an aging population in Washington, these kinds of laws do more harm than good. But then the bigger picture in Washington, they've got to figure out if you want to have access to improve the supply of anesthesiologists and providers, don't they?
Well, we saw this happen in the 90s, where subspecialists were, their revenue was threatened in the 90s. It was under a different administration that was trying to figure out how to pay primary care specialists more on the backs of the subspecialist community. And in the end, what resulted is the subspecialists, people stopped going into many of these subspecialists. It created a crisis in supply problems. There weren't enough specialists to service the communities. Reimbursement to those specialists skyrocketed, and ultimately costs in healthcare were higher than they were before. So nobody won under that kind of legislation. You do have to tackle the root causes of things. And what are the root causes of our healthcare industry being so expensive? I can tell you that only a small portion of it is provider compensation. It's in redundant care. It's in higher escalating pharmaceuticals and, you know, expense in this country. It's in our litigation system that is causing unnecessary care by providers that are trying to actually live within the malpractice reality. I mean, there are so many other things that are causing no benefit to society but costing us lots of money that we should be tackling first. We should be training more clinicians because our population is growing. And we're not tackling that problem. I mean, when's the last time you heard that somehow we were going to increase the number of people that we train in healthcare? There are no more federal dollars to support training. We are pretty much fixed. And yet our population is growing over 65 at record rates, and people over 65 need more care. Well, one would logically think that you need to train more people because you need more providers to care for the growing population. I think there's an estimate of somewhere, you know, and just in anesthesia alone, in the coming years, we're going to have a shortage of just 12,000 physicians, let alone our CRNA colleagues that are also going to be equally short. There's only 120,000 anesthesia providers in this country. When you say that there are 12,000 short, that's a massive number. Who's making up that delta? Who's giving care to those communities when there's nobody there to turn the lights on? Those are the root cause issues that we should be addressing.
I could not agree more. I have to tell you, Dr. DiCaprio, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you and talk to you about real big issues facing our provider community, hospitals, surgery centers, providers, anesthesiologists, anesthesia providers. Thank you for all the work that North American Partners in Anesthesia does, the magnificent process and growth you've had in every way, shape, and form over the last couple decades. Thank you for taking the time with us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a pleasure, John.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, too. You know, our goal for this podcast was to help educate the communities. You asked, what should we be doing? And what we want people to do is we want people to understand what the impact of this is and to use their voice to speak to their, you know, their political figures, to speak to their commercial insurance companies that they're paying premiums to and say, this isn't really what's in my best interest. And if we can be part of that education with you, we're more than happy because we went into healthcare in the end to serve the communities. And part of it is about education, and you're helping us serve that very important need. So thank you very much for everything that you do as well.
Thank you, Dr. DiCaprio.